hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Call of Podcast, the day after the holiday. It is the 28th day of May, 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for spreading the word on the show. Oh, man, I hope you had a great weekend. Had a pretty good one here, even though it was three women in the house with colds. One under one, one just turned two, and the wife. But so far, knock on wood, I've managed to avoid it. A couple of symptoms, a couple of suspicions. I thought I was coming down with it, but so far I've managed to Zycam it off. So thank God for that. As always, you can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Your compliments, complaints, whatever. I've been slacking on the emails because I tried to enjoy the weekend off. I did do one thing fun yesterday. I did a lot of things that were fun over the weekend, as much as you can, but they mostly involved shopping. But I went golfing yesterday with my friend Brian Darling, who's been a frequent guest on this program. And we just shot nine. We both tied at 42. We're not very good golfers. But he did something. I got to brag a little bit. I did about a 50-foot chip shot from not the rough, but not the fringe, just the fairway around the green. And I hold it. I didn't even look. I didn't even watch it go in because I didn't think it was going in. I thought it was going near. And I was walking up and Brian started going, "Holy crap." And I just saw it fall in. I didn't watch the whole thing. So that was pretty cool. And Brian did something that I have never seen before. He tried to go through some trees, or he tried to go over them. He didn't quite make it. And his ball ended up in the tree, stuck in the tree. He was playing this really bright orange, fluorescent, almost kind of irradiating, tough to look at ball, which we managed to lose a bunch of. And it was probably about 10 feet in the air. He took his putter out, got to play the ball where it lies, and he whacked it from the tree. It went about 2 feet forward, but it fell 10 feet down. So, you know, he's got that. You can bust out your Pythagorean theorem to figure out how far that hit was. But I'd never seen anybody have a ball stuck in a tree and then play it. I think I saw like a highlight of one pro at some point, but it was pretty fun. It was a good time and got some sun. So stealing vitamin D. Anyway, a lot of stuff to get to, lots of things going on. And I want to talk about the way things are changing in this country, kind of a hell in a handbasket kind of way. There were a bunch of stories about mental health. I'm not mocking anybody with mental health issues, but we have to be honest about what constitutes mental health. And what constitutes mental health these days can be something as ridiculous as just needing a me day. I'm not even kidding. This story, it was all over Drudge. It's the Straits Times. I'm not sure where that's out of, but the story is disturbing. It's from the Agence France-Presse, which is one of the wire services. So this is a wire story out of Geneva. The World Health Organization has, for the first time, recognized burnout in its International Classification of Diseases, which is widely used as a benchmark for diagnosis and health insurers. Yes, burnout. I'm just burned out. It is now a disease. The decision reached by the World Health Assembly in Geneva, which wraps up on Tuesday, today, could help put to rest decades of debate among experts over how to define burnout and whether it should be considered a medical condition. Can you believe this? I mean, we have it better than any human beings who have ever lived. We really honestly do. Yet we are out there desperately trying to create problems. We're trying to find problems. We are out of problems of any real sense. I write about this in my book pretty a lot, about how we're out of problems. And the human mind simply isn't conditioned yet for dealing with that fact. Throughout all of human history up until about 100 years ago, for everybody, with the exception of very few people, usually nobles, life consisted of getting up early in the morning, working your ass off to get enough food to keep yourself and your family alive, and then, depending on the weather, making sure you're able to keep yourself and your family warm through the day and the night without dying. At that time, a simple cut could kill you. A simple cut on your finger could become infected. People didn't know about germs. People didn't have soap handy and weren't bathing every day. So, you know, you cut your hand, you didn't go down and get some clean water and scrub that sucker with some soap and water and make sure it didn't get infected and put a Band-Aid on it. It was, you know, game on for germs. If you cut your hand, you cut your foot, you cut your leg, anything, and gangrene could set in. Then they'd have to amputate. And after that, you know, if things went well, you would go through hell but survive. A lot of times things didn't go well because antibiotics didn't exist. But after working from the moment you get up to the moment you went to bed to make sure that you had enough food to feed your family and enough warmth to make it through the night, you got to go to bed and then repeat it the next day. There were no weekends off. There was no, you know what, this Saturday I'm just going to have a me day. Didn't matter if you were burned out or not. If you didn't go out and tend to the crops, if you didn't go out and hunt, if you didn't go out and chop wood or whatever you have to do, you may not make it through the day or the week or the weekend or whatever. Now we have, you know, obesity. Even the poor people in this country and poor people around the world are obese, and they have all the health problems that go along with that. Our need for food is met pretty easily. Our need for warmth is met pretty easily. Our need to be cool in the summer is met pretty easily. And yes, I understand there are exceptions. There are people on fixed incomes. There are homeless people. And air conditioning isn't available to everybody where they live, but they can always go to a mall. There are plenty of places to go to cool down or warm up, if that's the case. In the grand scheme of things, without the rare exceptions being taken into account, we have solved those problems. In this country in particular, clean drinking water, readily available and free, or you can, as a kid, I used to drink out of the hose. I'm sure if I let my kid drink out of the hose, the neighbors would call Child Protective Services now. But it was normal. Water is plentiful and water is safe. Or you can, you know, pay a buck and a half or whatever the hell a bottle of water costs. But we have defeated the vast majority of life's real problems. And so now we have our self-imposed problems. Burnout. Oh, it's keeping up with the Joneses. There was a story the other day about how a huge percentage of millennials are one paycheck away from devastation, and another huge percentage of just Americans of all ages are one paycheck away from devastation. Well, those are self-imposed problems for the most part. They really are. I know that people live in expensive cities. Hell, I live in an expensive area. My job, if I could make what I'm making here, I could live like a king where I grew up. But I have to live here in order to do what I'm doing, so I don't get to live like a king. I get to live, you know, and there's some insecurity, but I'm a lot more than one paycheck away because I happen to save money. Part of that comes from having lived 13 years in a basement apartment in downtown Baltimore and, paying next to nothing in rent and staying there for a long time because I could afford it when I came out here. And when I could afford more, I decided, you know what? I'm not going to George Jefferson this sucker. I'm not going to move on up. I'm going to stay right here. It's perfectly fine. It serves my needs. Yeah, you know, I don't like living in areas with bars on the window, but I can afford it and save money. People don't do that anymore. Used to be keeping up with the Joneses. Now it's keeping up with the Kardashians, for God's sakes. So people look And I think this is a big part of what liberalism is based on and why it finds success in their we need to the rich to pay their fair share sort of garbage that they love to talk about. It doesn't matter how much money somebody else makes. It matters how much money you make. You're not making less because somebody else is making more. Jeff Bezos isn't worth $150 billion minus the $36 billion that his wife got, although he's probably made that up by now, because somebody else has less. Jeff Bezos created that wealth by creating Amazon. Same for Mark Zuckerberg. You can argue all day long that they didn't really produce anything. It's different. It's especially Mark Zuckerberg. It's just a thing on the internet. And you'd be right to a certain extent. But just like Henry Ford created his wealth, Mark Zuckerberg created his wealth. He didn't take it from somebody else to get it for himself. And you're never going to be able to live like what's his face? Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. You're just never going to. Yet so much of our culture is centered on watching these people and watching people like them. I am guilty too. Over the past, it's probably 3 weeks, I rewatched Entourage. I love the show Entourage. I kind of wanted to write movies. I still think I could. I have a really good idea for a TV show that would be great for HBO. If you're listening, HBO, it's pretty freaking awesome. But, you know, you watch how Vinnie Chase lives in there and you see how fun it looks, because except for the season 8 or whatever it was drug problem, he's got a pretty cush life, even though he's a complete screw up who spends money like he's a moron. He is a moron. But people watch that and they see, ooh, the People magazine and the Us Weekly, which are by far the most way more popular than anything news related, is all this celebrity crap. That's why there's so many different shows focusing on these people. And you see them getting off the private jet. You see their mansions and MTV Cribs and all this stuff. And you think, why can't I have that? What they don't show you in all that stuff is the lean years and the ass-busting that they did to get to that point. It creates a kind of jealousy. You look at Kanye West and you think, the guy's just a musician. He designs clothes that I don't really care for. What the hell does he get all this money for? He doesn't need all that money. He doesn't need to fly private. He doesn't need this, that, and the other thing. It doesn't matter. What Kanye West does, what Donald Trump does as a private citizen, what anybody does in their own life has zero impact on anybody else. If Kanye West were flying around the country robbing banks and ripping off grandma's checks, then sure, absolutely, a case could be made. But he's not doing that. He's earning his money. Donald Trump earned his money. All of these rich people earned their money. If you want to live like them, find a way to earn a bunch of money or get used to the fact that you're never going to be flying private all around the country and all around the world. You're probably not going to holiday in Ibiza, or you're going to have to save up for a very long time and spend a fortune. And then when you're done with it, you'll have some really cool pictures, some fun memories, and nothing in your bank account, and you'll be back to square one. People don't want to live within their means, because the Democratic Party has instilled this kind of jealousy. They want you to believe that the rich are rich and that makes you poor. That's why they say, oh, these tax cuts, they're giving money to the rich. They're not. Actually, the tax cuts, whatever you think of them, revenues to the federal government have never been higher. We don't have a tax problem. We have a spending problem, because no matter how much comes into the federal government, they are going to spend it. They're going to spend more than that. They're going to piss it all away and then some, and then turn on the printing presses. So, and the idea of, well, these tax cuts, they're giving money to the rich. No, they're taking less money from everybody. It just so happens that a 1 percentage point decrease in income taxes to people who make several million dollars a year in raw dollar amounts equals a hell of a lot more than a 10 percentage point tax cut to somebody making $50,000 a year. Why? Math. Do the math. But Democrats don't want you to do the math. That's why they use percentages rather than raw numbers. That's why they never explain it. They just have talking points to try and make the average middle class person angry that somebody has more than them, that somebody has something that they don't, as if they are entitled to it. If Kanye wasn't flying private, would your life be better? Would anybody's life be better? Unless he's a total dick to the stewardess staff on the plane, probably not. Yet there are 24, 25, 50, I don't know how many Democrats running for president who would have you believe that it would, who would have you believe that that's part of the reason you're miserable. And sadly, it makes a lot of people miserable. It works. Jealousy is one hell of a motivator. We're only, I would say, 5 years away from jealousy and wealth envy being classified as a mental disorder. I swear to God. I mean, if they're considering now burnout as being a medical condition, how long could it possibly be? The story continues. In the latest update of its catalog of diseases and injuries around the world, WHO defines burnout as, quote, a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. Get a new job. Take a chill pill. Have a drink every once in a while. Take a vacation day. Take a sick day. You know, what you don't get to do is take somebody else's money because you're feeling too stressed out. Part of the reason, might I suggest, people feel too stressed out is the aforementioned living beyond your means. See, the thing, you would think that we would have learned something from the financial crisis slash real estate bubble that burst in 2008. You'd think we would be heeding the lessons of that. That just because a bank is willing to give you a loan for $500,000 doesn't mean you should take the loan for $500,000. You think, I can afford a loan. I can afford $500,000 or $1 million house because the payments at the very beginning are like $600 a month. That's great. Yeah, do some math. Talk to somebody who knows. Just look at the freaking paperwork and notice that eventually the payments balloon because they're not going to give you a 60-year mortgage. If you could find me a 60-year mortgage, I would love it. I'd buy a mansion, probably. But you have to think responsibly rather than immediately. But people want to live like a Kardashian, so they take on more house than they can. And guess what? A couple years later, the payments go from $500 a month to $3,000 a month. And guess what people's salaries haven't done in that amount of time? They haven't gone up sixfold. Isn't that weird how that works? So maybe don't take the $500,000 home. Maybe just because a bank is willing to give you $500,000, maybe you say, you know what? That's nice. That's sweet. But I'm going to find a nice $300,000 home or a $200,000 home, or depending on where you live, $150,000, $100,000, whatever it is. I grew up in a house that my parents bought for $10,000. 35 years later, whenever they sold it, it sold for $50,000, I think. So it went up after the 30-year mortgage. They paid $30,000 for it, so they made a decent amount of money off of it. It's not FU money by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm sure that it's all gone by now, but it was 20 feet by 20 feet. I watch this HGTV constantly. It's actually on right now. My sister and I text each other on this House Hunters International thing every night when it's on at 10:30. We watch these people who say, well, we need an ensuite in the master bedroom, and we need double vanities in the ensuite because I couldn't possibly share a sink and a mirror with anybody, especially somebody I'm married to. It's just impossible. We would never, we'd be stumbling over each other. And we text each other because, and this is going to sound, you know, crazy to a lot of people, but we grew up in a house, five kids, two parents, always a dog, sometimes a cat, one bathroom. One bathroom. It was three bedrooms and one bathroom house, 20 feet by 20 feet. There was an upstairs where my three sisters slept. There was a main floor where my parents' bedroom was and my brother and I bedroom was. And then there was a basement that eventually got finished. And then we moved my brother and I's bedroom down there. One bathroom. And then my dad installed a bathroom, a half bath, they call it, downstairs. It was never really all that finished, but it was a second toilet. Didn't have a tub, didn't have a shower. We had one shower slash tub in the whole house for seven people. Yet for the life of me and for the life of my sister, and I was the only one who lived there with everybody, because until I came, I was the baby, you know, and I came along years later, I was the number seven. I can't remember ever really pounding on the door, I got to go to the bathroom, or I need to take a shower, or somebody rushing you when you took a shower. The only thing I remember is we kind of used to throw glasses of cold water into the shower whenever everybody was in there, because you'd go in there, I got to brush my teeth or something, and then you'd throw a glass, because you just pranking each other. But somehow we survived. The concept of a double vanity, hell, we had one vanity in the house and it was tiny. Now you see these people, I gotta have it, I've gotta redo the bath, couldn't possibly, I need five bedrooms and three bathrooms, and it's them and no kids. And you're like, what in the hell is going on with these people? And I really think it's this culture of we feel this sense of entitlement that is instilled to us by both political parties, quite frankly, because both of them, to one degree or another, sit there and tell you that government is going to solve your problems. Don't worry, we'll take care of it. Government can step in. Government, we got to go after those predatory lenders. It wasn't all those people in the mid-2000s who bought more house than they could ever possibly afford. It wasn't that banks were pressured by the government to give out loans, and they knew that they were bad loans, but they knew that the government was going to charge them with racism and God knows what else, so they'd better give those loans, and they'd just package those loans and sell them, get them off their books as quickly as possible. They knew what was coming. They weren't stupid. They would have never given most of those loans, but the government says you've got to do it, or, you know, people, home ownership is the most important thing in the world. Now, responsibility is a little bit more important than home ownership, but responsibility isn't politically advantageous for either political party anymore. So that's going the way of the dodo. And the future is absolutely screwed. And now you can probably get, not now, but soon, you'll be able to get on disability because you're totally burned out on your job. Oh, it's so stressful. And then soon it will be, I'm burned out because of college and I need to go on disability. All of this ridiculousness, the coddling that is going on for to obtain power. To attain power, people are promising you the sun, the moon, and the stars. They don't own any of them. And here we are. Now there's another story, because this isn't just about the one thing. This is about a bunch of things that have come to a head in the last few days that I've noticed. And when this really does come to a head in society, when there are fewer people working because they're burned out, or whatever, they're jealous, they're envious, they're not getting a living wage, or they raise the minimum wage to $15 is good enough. Why isn't $20? If $15 solves the problem, why not $30? We can get out ahead of this thing, right? Because it doesn't work. Another story related to this and how we're out of problems and how we're creating problems comes from CNET. And again, it's the World Health Organization. And all of this stuff ripples down, these gigantic international organizations that determine a lot more about our lives than I think anybody wants to admit. World Health CNET reports, your Fortnite addiction might just be an official illness. The World Health Organization on Saturday adopted the latest updates to its International Classification of Diseases, the ICD, which adds gaming disorder to its list of modern diseases. See, modern diseases. We are creating our problems. We can't accept that we have it better than anybody who has ever lived. The organization last June added gaming addiction under its section of potentially harmful technology-related behaviors, including too much use of the internet, computers, smartphones, and more. So that's all coming down the pipe, isn't it? Despite opposition from trade groups, which reportedly pointed to contradictory research on the subject and touted some of the virtues of video games, the latest ICD was officially approved at the 72nd World Health Assembly. Isn't this nice? Every year people get together, probably someplace really nice, probably paid for with our tax dollars, as representatives from around the world get together and decide what are and are not disorders or mental diseases. And then our governments snap into action because we don't really have autonomy anymore. The story continues. Gaming disorder lives under the Disorders Due to Addictive Behavior section of the ICD. It's described as, quote, a pattern of persistent or recurrent gaming behavior, which may be online or offline, manifested by impaired control over gaming, increasing priority given to gaming to the extent that gaming takes precedent over other life interests and daily activities, and continuation or escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences, end quote. This now is a disorder right up there with being burned out. Oh, just, I'm so burned out. And I've got to get home so I can play my video games. And these are adults, supposedly adults. Look, everybody gets stressed out. Everybody needs a release. But to say you're too stressed out to function, that you have a disorder and will eventually need disability so that you can then go home and play video games to which you're allegedly addicted, is insane in and of itself. Maybe we should declare the members of the World Health Organization a disorder at this point, because this is nuts. These are made up problems. These are people who don't have anybody in their lives to tell them to get off their ass and quit screwing around, or have never been told that because they've been coddled far too much in their lives. They live probably on credit cards and they pay the minimum balances. But every time that the company calls up or sends an email and says, hey, you can increase your credit balance, they go, ooh, goody, I'm going to totally do that, without thinking of the consequences of their actions, because they're insulated from the consequences of their actions. Remember back in 2008 and in the campaign of 2008 and after, in the campaign, every campaign right after that, Democrats were running around talking about predatory lenders. Predatory lenders were the problem, as if people were walking down the street minding their own business and out from the bushes jumped some monster with with a mortgage contract and forced them to sign. I don't really want to buy this house. It's too much. I couldn't afford it. Don't make me do this. And you know what? There's going to be one or two things on this mortgage contract: your signature or your brains. You figure it out. That's the way they're portrayed, rather than economic illiterates or people who are conditioned to be jealous and instilled with this entitlement mentality that they deserve something rather than earn it. You deserve what you can afford. You take on responsibility and you meet that responsibility. Instead, the government swooped in and said, all you people who aren't paying your mortgages, don't worry, we're going to take care of you. We'll protect you. The lessons that should have been learned at that time were not learned because the consequences were swept away. And we're seeing that repeat on a smaller scale constantly. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw it repeat on another trillion-dollar scale. I mean, we're seeing people run for president based on this. Is $1.5 trillion in student loans in this country, not because somebody forced these people to go to college and major in gender or ethnic studies that have zero prospect for employment except for teaching other idiots who want to major in that crap. Nobody forced them to do that. Nobody forced them to sign their student loan contracts and then go, I didn't really mean that. You're so mean. You're making me spend all this money, $150,000 on a useless bachelor's degree in a field that has 5% employment. And now the Democratic field, pretty much, is running around promising people to absolve them of their debts to one degree or another. It could be the Elizabeth Warren degree where it's wiped clean, whereas others want to take over part of it. And oh, if you volunteer at a soup kitchen, we'll write off a bunch of your debt. We're all going to end up paying for it. And there is a sadly shrinking, but still a majority of this country who didn't act irresponsibly, who didn't make these mistakes. And these are obvious mistakes. If you don't understand the concept of a loan, that when you take out a loan, when you sign that contract, you are obligated to pay it back. If you didn't get that, then you probably should go have a serious talk with your parents about how they brought you up wrong. Then go back to your high school and say, what, you didn't teach me the basics in responsibility and math. But that's not the case. Everybody knows this. You can't possibly avoid those lessons from growing up and being human. So instead, our government is saying, don't worry about it. Sooner or later, I guarantee you, they will make a move to absolve people of their student debt. I guarantee it. Because this is how it always works. Democrats throw out these ridiculous ideas, these stupid ideas, these destructive ideas. They make you think that the government is supposed to take care of you. And Republicans counter. They will come up with their own. We have to address the student loan crisis. You hear grumblings of that. And they always offer half a loaf. And if you're inclined to believe that the government is supposed to provide you bread, why would you ever vote for somebody who's offering you a half a loaf when the other side is offering you a full loaf? When in reality, the United States is a bakery. You can make your own damn bread. But nobody wants to say that. The real solution to the student loan crisis, as it is responsibility. Oh, you want to go to college, but you got into overinflated, expensive university? It's going to cost you $50,000 a year to get a bachelor's degree? Well, if you got into there, just imagine the kind of scholarship money that state school university will throw at you. If you're that good to get into these ridiculously expensive schools, think of the potential of saving money by getting scholarships to go to a less expensive school. Or if you have to take out student loans, and I had to take out student loans, so I'm not against the concept of student loans, maybe you don't go to the expensive $50,000 a year school where you move someplace far away and you've got to pay the added bonus of room and board. Maybe you go someplace closer. Maybe you go somewhere in state. Maybe you go somewhere that's a commuter college. The important thing is to get the education. And if you think that where you go matters more than the education you get when you get there, then you are not capable of getting an education, and you should not go anywhere. You should go and work for a while. Maybe you'll find you like it better. Plus, now that this thing is being beaten into people's heads, and this is a very preachy episode, and I apologize, but this stuff has been sticking in my craw for a while. We have this mantra And Mike Rowe talks about this all the time, the idea that you have to go to school. You have to go to college. It's the only way to get ahead. It is not the only way to get ahead. Some of the wealthiest people in the history of this country did not have a formal education. What they did was they had ideas, and they had a willingness to take risks and responsibility, by the way, and a work ethic that very few of us have. And it paid off for them. There are many more people who it didn't pay off for, you never heard of. But people have to take chances in order to get rewards. And simply going to school is not the answer. There are a lot of people who aren't ready to go to school. I wasn't ready to go to school right out of high school. It was never beaten to my head. The idea was you graduate high school, you get a job. That's what you do. Over and done. College wasn't an option. The only person in my college, in my family, to go to college. The only one who wanted to go to college. I just wanted to go because kind of a lot of other people were going. I didn't know what I was trying to avoid responsibility. That was no reason to go to college. I wasted that first year in acting classes because it was fun, because I wasn't serious. It took a few years for me to pull my head out of my ass and figure things out. And I used that time to work and to figure things out. I wasn't making a fortune. I didn't start a company. I probably could have. I really probably should have and avoided the whole thing. But such is life. It's options for everybody. A welder, an electrician, a skilled tradesperson can make a ton of money, relatively speaking. But you're never going to be able to live like a Kardashian. People think that you go to college, you get a degree, and the next thing you know, you're an honorary Kardashian and you're rolling in the dough. That ain't how life works. Yet now we have the World Health Organization adding to this mentality of don't worry, it's not because you're lazy, it's not because you're dumb, it's not because you just won't get off your ass because you want to play that video game all day, or you're just burned out. No, that's a disorder and you can't help it. You couldn't possibly help it. You need government to step in and to force insurance companies, or when government fully takes over healthcare, which is probably coming, the government will take care of it again. Don't worry, it's always government. It all leads back to government. Oh, by the way, while they're classifying video game addiction and being burned out as mental disorders, they did vote to remove something from mental disorders. Human Rights Watch is very excited about this. They report on their website, the World Health Organization approved a major change to its Global Manual of Diagnoses on May 25th, 2019 that will greatly benefit transgender people around the world. Human Rights Watch said today, the World Health Assembly, the WHO governing body that represents 194 member states voted for new diagnostic guidelines that no longer describe gender nonconformity as a mental disorder. Historically, many medical systems, including those supported by the World Health Organization, have categorized being transgender as a mental health condition, but an evolving scientific understanding of gender and tireless advocacy by transgender activists around the world were crucial in bringing about this development. Yes, being transgender is no longer considered to be a mental disorder. If that guy thinks he's a woman, he's not crazy. You are, for not recognizing it all along. See, it's important, the wording that Human Rights Watch uses in their own post about this. I'll read the sentence again where it should, but an evolving scientific understanding of gender and tireless advocacy by transgender activists. That's what brought about this change. Now, this is the party of science, of course, but if you lobby hard enough, apparently you can change science or the scientist's mind who put these things together, because everything is political. Burnout is a mental disorder, but a 300-pound, 6-foot-8 guy insisting that he is a 12-year-old ballerina is now not a problem. You are the problem for not accepting that. Do you see how insane this has gotten? Now, up is down, left is right, it doesn't matter, day is night. Crazy is now sane, and lazy is now crazy. All with the show of hands. This isn't science, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. It's the same with climate change. Oh, a vast majority of scientists know it. It's not a show of hands. Because if science were a show of hands, if you want to take the climate change model, for example, and just apply it to, say, biology. You know, they said, well, a majority of the scientific community says that they voted on this. That number is bogus. By the way, it's a made-up number. It's a whole bunch of people, a small number of people, less than 100 people, in a couple of surveys, by the way. I write about that in my book. I don't have time to go into it now. But if they believe that science is no longer proof, it's just a show of hands and majority rule, how do you think they would react if, just as an example, conservatives, particularly religious conservatives, decided to flood the field of biology and medicine? And then they conducted a survey on when life begins. And by majority vote, and by clear majority vote, it was decided that life begins at conception. Do you think that model of, you know, a vast majority of scientists agree would apply when it comes to abortion? Of course it wouldn't. Absolutely under no circumstances would that ever be allowed to stand. The left that has been trying to use these two bogus surveys of people who work in the science field, not climatologists, saying, well, 97% of scientists agree that climate change is happening, and to question it is heresy, would suddenly freak out and say, you know what, they're just a whole bunch of religious zealots demanding that what they personally believe be accepted as truth, as fact. They would change their tune immediately. When you control the unit of measure, you control everything. When you control language, you can control people. And these organizations, these international, in quote, organizations, are now trying to change the culture, to create a more dependent culture on one side by saying those people who are screwing themselves up because nobody ever told them no and maybe they're the result of bad parenting are now also saying that people who, you know, don't agree with biology anymore, that's okay. That's fine. Biology isn't really science anyway. It's what somebody identifies as. We as a society, at some day, we're going to have a national holiday for Caitlyn Jenner and Rachel Dolezal. And we owe Rachel Dolezal an apology. Remember Rachel Dolezal? She was the white woman who said she was black and tanned and used creams or whatever the hell she did, and she did her hair in a certain way, and she was running a local NAACP, and then it turns out that no, she was just a white woman who said she identified as black, and everybody ostracized her. It was ridiculous, and she ended up in the poorhouse, and I think she went to jail for welfare fraud because she was screwed out of the ability to make a buck. She was screwed out of the ability to make a living. She was such a pariah. Well, we owe her an apology. If we're going to allow anybody to just declare their gender on a whim and a moment's notice, because it's not just I'm a man and now I'm a woman and therefore I will forever live as a woman. It's gender fluidity. It's the whole shebang. Gender fluidity is what do I feel like today? I'll just declare it. And everybody else has to conform. Oh, by the way, you can't use normal human pronouns for me. I've made up words for it. And there's another made up word. It's folks with an X, F-O-L-X. They've created this word, I kid you not, that now refers to a group of people, and you're supposed to use this instead of folks with a K, because everything's got to be different, and because you never know. Folks kind of is addressing men and women, whereas you never know when addressing a group of people what could be out there. There could be somebody who identifies as a racetrack or a table, and if you use normal human pronouns and address this crowd that way, you could be then alienating these people. I'm not kidding. Look up that word and be prepared to vomit. But it's not just the World Health Organization. It is a coordinated attack on common sense and, quite frankly, science by every facet of life. Hollywood has been doing it for a very long time. Now you've got Gillette, allegedly the best a man can get. But is it really a man? This is a new, it's called groundbreaking and celebrated advertisement for Gillette razors. It is a transgender man learning to shave for the first time, being taught to shave for the first time by its father. I don't know which, it's a really a woman, says he's a man. And this is, they're going to win awards for this advertisement. Listen to it.
Growing up, I was always trying to figure out what kind of man I wanted to become, and I'm still trying to figure out what kind of man that I want to become. I always knew I was different. I didn't know that there was a term for the type of person that I was. I went into my transition just wanting to be happy. I'm glad I'm at the point where I'm able to shave. South, south, north, north, east, west, never in a hurry. Yeah. Right.
Warm. Now, don't be scared. Don't be scared. Shaving is about being confident. Oh, you're doing fine. You are doing fine.
I'm at the point in my manhood where I'm actually happy. It's not just myself transitioning, it's everybody around me transitioning.
Now, the person shaving for the first time is named Samson Bono Kabatu Brown. I'm probably butchering the middle name. It's a transgender man, and at the end of the ad, words come up on the screen that are supposed to be empowering and whatever. It is ridiculous. Whenever, wherever, however it happens, your first shave is special. It's not really. The way CNN covers this, it's under their pride and progress section, because CNN is a news organization. They write, a man's first shave is a milestone, no matter who you are. Do you remember your first shave? Did you care? Did the family gather around and take pictures and with your mom crying and your dad sitting there trying to explain to you not to slice a jugular while you shave? By the way, this Samson person looks to be in their 20s. I don't know. Certainly old enough to know how to handle a razor in some way. If Samson was 12, I could see the father. The father looks to be in his 60s. Samson looks to be in the 20s. I'm just not really sure how this is a super special moment. As a man's first shave is a milestone, no matter who you are. You know how I did my first shave? My sister and her husband came to visit us. He was in the military in Mississippi. And the basement that I told you about, my bedroom was in, my brother had moved out, probably gotten married by then. And I think I was maybe the only one living there. But he would put his shave kit, his travel kit, in that bathroom and shave in what was essentially my sink. And I just used his stuff. I wanted to know what it was. Probably 12, maybe, right around then. I didn't have to shave. It wasn't close to needing to shave, but I was always kind of curious. I probably wondered how the hell he blew through so much shaving cream, because I did it like 3 or 4 times a day because I thought it was kind of neat. I didn't slice myself at all. I think he had like regular one blade Bix, those yellow things, disposable. And I shaved. He also had an electric razor that I would run all over my face. There was nothing to cut, but I would just do that. So I just wanted to shave. Nobody sat down and taught me how to shave ever. You just kind of figure it out. It wasn't a special moment that I still tear up thinking about. Is my dad had a beard my whole life. I've never actually seen my father's face. He's had a beard my whole life. Grew it when he was probably 24, and he's never shaved it. I've seen pictures of him younger. My mom used to say that if he were ever to shave when I was a kid, if he were ever to shave, he'd have to take the dog and me into the bathroom and watch him shave, because we'd never seen him. The dog would have freaked out, and I would have freaked out because we never saw his face. Shave, the first shave is super duper important. No. And these razors nowadays, unless you're going side to side, you're probably not going to slice yourself up all that much unless you used it for 3 months and it's dull as a brick. Anyway, the story continues. A man's first shave is a milestone, no matter who you are. But for transgender man Samson Bonarabacatuno, whatever, Brown, it was memorable for several reasons. Brown shared the experience with a man identified as his father in an advertisement for Gillette, making the maker of the razors and shaving supplies. Man identified as his father? Is this really where we are? Is it his father or is it not his father? Man identified as his father. Well, I identify as his father. Well, I identify as his power of attorney and drain his bank account. And, you know, who are you to judge? You can't possibly tell me I'm not. The video, which Gillette shared on its Facebook page, shows the Toronto-based artist standing in front of a bathroom mirror as his father coaches him. It really is. It's pathetic. If you haven't seen it by now, check it out. It's ridiculous. Even if you say, okay, transgender men are men. If they are, then you can probably drop the transgender part, couldn't you? Because you can't, because they're not really. They have to have that qualifier. But don't worry, sooner or later, they'll get rid of that qualifier as well. Remember, it's no longer a mental disorder. It's a scientific fact. But this is where we're heading. This is where these things go. They creep through every aspect of the culture. And sooner or later, if you just make a joke, because everything should be joked about, you are a monster. It will be a hate crime to not award this advertisement and Gillette your business. I can see why all these other shaving companies, the online ones that are much cheaper and just as good, if not better, are doing so well. Because people don't want to deal with this crap, you know? It's a freaking razor, all right? If you want to shave or you need to shave or you're taking hormones and you have to shave, whatever, it's not an accomplishment. People have been shaving for centuries, okay? You aren't special. Get over yourself. Nobody gives a damn. I don't celebrate you. I don't care about you or your gender identity or your sexual orientation. All I ask is that you extend me the same courtesy. I'll leave you alone. You leave me alone. I don't want you to celebrate my heterosexuality. I don't want to celebrate any your heterosexuality, your homosexuality, your transgender identity, anything. I don't care. But that's not where the left is. They're not content to leave other people alone. You will be punished in the near future, if not already, for not using pre-approved pronouns. I guarantee it. California tried. New York tried. California actually did it in their nursing home system. You can be punished now for misgendering or not using the pronoun that someone wants you to use when referring to them. Our freedoms are being chipped away in the name of freedom. We're being told that this is freedom. And for people who feel this way, it is in a certain way. But it ends right there with them. And if you don't conform to what the left demands you conform to in regards to other people, then your freedom will be taken away. Not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon. You'll be screwed. We'll all be screwed. In the few minutes we have left, I did have other audio to get to. I didn't plan on doing this whole show as kind of a lecture on how the future is screwed, but the future really is screwed. If we don't get a handle on this, if we don't return some sanity and some common sense, you can have all the compassion in the world, but just because a group of people tell you that the sun rises in the west doesn't make it so. And you shouldn't have to conform to their demands that you say the sun rises in the west simply because they insist that it does. There are certain things that are real and are irrefutable. And those realities are being bastardized. Reality should not be dependent upon somebody's belief in it. It just is. And now that's being warped. So there, I'll get off my high horse on this one and wrap it up with a little bit of Mayor Pete. Mayor Pete, he's still out there running for president. He's in third or fourth place. They're all well behind Uncle Crazy Sniffy Joe Biden. But he said something, and this was more the way it was reported than it is what Pete said, but it is also what Pete said. He was in a conversation with Robert Costa at the Washington Post the other day, and asked about they really wanted him to attack the president, asked about the NFL and the kneeling and Colin Kaepernick and all of that. And listen to how this exchange went.
As a veteran, how did you feel when NFL players knelt during the national anthem in protest to police brutality?
I felt that I was watching Americans exercise a right that I had put my life on the line to defend. The point of defending free speech is not that you expect to be perfectly aligned with every speech act that is protected. It's that that's a fundamental American freedom. It's a huge part of what makes America America. And when that flag, that same flag, was on my shoulder, I didn't think of the flag as something that itself, as an image, was sacred. I thought of it as something that was sacred because of what it represented. One of the very things it represented is the freedom of speech, and that's one of the reasons I served.
Now, the media couched this as, and Pete probably was thinking this, and Robert Costa clearly wanted something about Trump in the response. But the media couched this in their reporting as he takes a dig at Trump. He says, I put my life on the line so that Colin Kaepernick can do whatever he wanted. That's what makes America great. I defended your freedom to protest the American flag. Okay, yeah, fine. Nobody said Colin Kaepernick didn't have a right to do it. It was whether or not he could do it at work, and whether or not his employer was paying him millions of dollars could say, hey, you know what? You do what you want in your spare time, but while you're on the clock, pal, how about you do what you're told? Or you're not, well, he's not on the clock anymore. But lost in all of that is that while Mayor Pete gets a nice round of applause for saying, I defended the rights, I put my life on the line to defend the right of people to do just that, you also put your life on the line to defend the rights of people to complain about Colin Kaepernick and the protesters doing just that, right? It's not a one-way street. The right to free speech is also the right to criticize other people for how they choose to exercise that free speech. Is it not? If it is not, then you're not actually defending the right to free speech. You're only defending the right of people to say things with which you have political sympathies and probably agree. But neither Costa nor Mayor Pete went that deep. Costa is never going to go that deep. He's a reporter. He's on the team. And Mayor Pete isn't going to go that deep either, or that far, because that isn't going to help him when it comes to a Democratic primary. You say, you know what? All the people who booed, all the people who protested Colin Kaepernick, all the people who were pissed off, they have the exact same right. They do. They absolutely do. Yet one side of that, had liberal media types criticizing them constantly for being, oh, you're racist, you're racist. They're calling people racist, watering down the meaning of the word, diluting the whole thing. But that's all they have. Oh, you're a horrible racist. No, there are a lot of people who are genuinely offended by millionaires kneeling, saying, oh, there's police brutality. Because, again, back to my book, all that garbage, all the rhetoric associated with the Black Lives Matter is garbage. It is not true. It is not open season on young black men by police. Now, by other young black men, a case could be made. But the statistics, the reality, the actual numbers show that the whole thing was a political scam from the beginning, from the get-go, used to keep people riled up to prevent them from thinking rationally and acting sanely. How else could you explain Chicago generationally electing Democrats? Every Democrat, they come in, they all say the same damn thing. They all want to do the same thing. The only thing that changes is the actual physical body of the people who lead Chicago. They all come in, the same failed policies keep being perpetuated. Irrationally thinking people would go, you know what? We're going to try something else. We're going to go in a different direction. We're going to try a different philosophy. But people who are manipulated, lied to, and emotionally screwed with don't think rationally, and they keep electing Democrats. Like I said, the future is screwed. That is all the time we have for today. I know I didn't get that much into political news of the day. We'll have more time for that for the week. But this is, I think, much more important than anything going on politically right now, because this is all political. Andrew Breitbart used to say politics is downstream of culture, and the culture is definitely flushing its toilet. And it's getting to our politics. And when it does, we're all screwed, not just the future. Thanks for listening. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Thanks for telling a friend. Please share on social media. I think this is a pretty good episode. If you disagree, let me know. If you think so, write and review and all that stuff on iTunes and all that good stuff. And tell friends and all that. We'll be back here tomorrow for another exciting episode.